But it's on the right, Minister of Justice said it.
Hi, lady, good morning.
Yes, we can't hear Khalid, and I don't know if he can hear us, but I mean, we've run comprehensive tests and everything's working. I don't know if you want to wait and make another try or. Ah, ok. Porque na mensagem que dizia, que não nos conseguiu ouvir. Mas pronto. Should we start? Ok. Turn the microphone on, not so much because of the sound in the room, but so that Mr. Khalid Malik can hear us. So, first of all, let me start by welcoming you to the Portuguese Parliament. I hope you're enjoying your trip and visit to Portugal, and that's been it's been fruitful, and I hope that our short meeting will be fruitful as well. My two colleagues, Cristina Correia and Rafael Silva, are the heads of the two main bodies that deal with the legislative procedure. The unit is somewhat bigger. We have the Parliamentary Support Directorate, which is the directorate that, by its own nature and name, deals with the legislative procedure. So we have four units nowadays: the Plenary Support Division, the Committee Support Division, the transcription division that transcribes every plenary meeting, every ad hoc inquiry committee, it's actually the oldest unit in the Portuguese Parliament. It's been transcribing everything that members of Parliament say since 1821. And you can actually read all the minutes in the Portuguese website since 1821. We still have a fourth body, the Parliamentary Budgetary Office, which has a somewhat different nature. It deals only with the budgetary issues, as the name calls and says, and they deal mainly with the budgetary specialized committee. So we're, I'll tell you some big numbers, if you like. We in the Portuguese Parliament, we have something like 430 staff. Our directorate is responsible for 123 of those 430, so we're the biggest and largest unit, a small business, if you like, within the parliament. And we deal, actually, with going to the legislative procedure, we deal with every legislative initiative since the moment they are presented to the moment they leave parliament, and sometimes even after that, as my colleagues will explain in a short minute. We've been developing tools and methods and procedures to deal with the legislative procedure in a more thorough way, in a more, if you like, efficient way. We still have shortcomings, of course. I suppose you've already been briefed on the role that the Portuguese Parliament plays in the constitutional system. Nonetheless, I mean, Cristina and Rafael are much wiser than me and know much more about legislative procedures than me. So without further ado, I will give them the floor. Of course, interrupt us whenever you feel like. It's a very informal conversation. We're very happy to share our experience with you. We're very happy to tell you where we're not fulfilling our goals and where we are very happy with what we've done. So please feel free to interrupt us.
So, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Portuguese Parliament, even in a virtual way. So, we have prepared a little presentation. As my director said, it is, well, you can interrupt whenever you feel you want more information. It's only in order to have a guideline for the meeting, but it is not mandatory to do it until the end, or it's what we want is that after the meeting you have gathered all the information that you are expecting to gather. So after almost 2 weeks, after same days here in Lisbon, you already know that we have our sovereign bodies, the president or the head of state, that ensures the regular functioning of all the institutions and represents Portugal in matters of international affairs. our government that is headed by the Prime Minister and is responsible, as the name says, for governing the country and implementing policies, and then our parliament with 230 MPs responsible for representing the Portuguese people, enacting laws, approving the state budget, and overseeing the government's actions. This session today is more about legislative procedure, but more and more, the Portuguese parliament, I mean, I would say, like all parliaments in the 21st century, are shifting the activity from legislating to overseeing, but and sometimes it's two parts of a whole reality. And then, of course, we have the judiciary power. So it's, in theory, a classical three-party, the legislative, executive, and judiciary. In practice, here in Portugal, as you already might know, the government can legislate, and there are lots of areas where we have competence that are the same as the government. So the executive is also legislate sometimes a lot. So it's not so clear in practice, but in theory, we have all this division. So in a system of checks and balances, so the President of the Republic has the power of the dissolution of the Parliament, which we call the atomic bomb. It's really the last power which, well, this President has used quite a lot since we are having elections every year. And also regarding the laws, he also has the power of veto, either for law questions or political questions, but, well, that is the check that the President of the Republic can do towards the Parliament. And, of course, there is also a magistrature of influence, since he has, well, when the President speaks, even if it is not mandatory what he says, he can influence the going ongoing of the politics. Then the parliament, the president takes office before the parliament, and the parliament authorizes certain acts of the president of the republic. For example, he can't go away from the country without authorization, prior authorization from the parliament, or sometimes it's not prior because we are dissolved, like it's now the case. But all the groups say, okay, he can go, and then it is ratified afterwards. The parliament has the power of political supervision and can also vote the vote of no confidence of the government. And the president of the republic appoints the prime minister and has the power to resign the government. So as you can see, and then of course the courts, the judiciary power has the can supervise or can judicially see for the legality of the acts of the political players. So as you can see, we have, well, it is the system is designed so that there is no concentration of powers in none of the organs that have the political powers or the judicial one. Coming back here to our house, to the parliament, we have several parliamentary bodies, the president of the parliament, the plenary, the conference of leaders, the bureau, the parliamentary committees, and also the conference of the parliamentary committee's chairpersons. Since we are only have 1.5 hours, we are concentrating our presentation in those bodies that have an activity regarding the legislative procedure, and starting, of course, with our president, and Rafael will tell you about it. So, desculpa.
We'll start with our president of the parliament. Politically, he is the second figure of the state. He replaced the president of the republic when he in his absence. Internally, he's elected by a majority of the MPs, the members of the parliament. It's the first act that they. It's to elect the president of the parliament. His main competences are to represent the parliament, direct and coordinate its work, especially the plenary meeting. He's the kind of the referee in the discussions in plenary meetings. He also has the power to admit or not admit bills, even though most of the bills are admitted, but there can be some formal reason or some really powerful constitutional reason to not admit any bill, but it's rare that to happen. He also has the competence to set the order of business of each plenary meeting. Obviously, he doesn't do that. He doesn't set the order of the plenary meetings without hearing the parliamentary groups. The leaders of the parliamentary groups, they gather in the Conference of Leaders. It's another organ, and they are always heard. Every 2 weeks, they plan the plenary meetings. The meetings are on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So each parliamentary group choose which bill they want to see discussed, or they also can schedule debates, political debates, to scrutiny the government. In those meetings, the president always seeks to find the most majority to set the order of business of each meeting. In the plenary sittings, there are 230 members of parliament. They have a legislative or political monitoring competence. The meetings that I told you about on Wednesdays and Thursdays, they are in the afternoon, and on the Friday mornings are usually the day that the votes take place. Every bill that I discussed on Wednesday, or Thursday, or Friday are voted on Friday.
Okay, and then back to the committees, because of course all the bills have a workflow that involves both organs. So our parliamentary committees, the standing committees, which is the ones that matter here, we have specialized committees with permanent with competence over specific matters that exist in every legislature. And also we can establish ad hoc committees. For this legislature, we have established six ad hoc committees, three of them inquiry committees, and one inquiry committee was, one of them was quite complicated, and there was a report drafted. The other two, and all the other ad hoc committees went down with the dissolution as well, or will stopped working, as well as the standing parliamentary committees. Contrary to other systems, we don't have, our rules of procedure don't determine how many standing committees we'll have. In fact, it is decided in every legislature, and going back to what I said about scrutinizing the government, we try, well, of course we are an independent organ, but we try as much as possible, or we try, our politicians try, as much as possible that there is a kind of a correspondence between the competences of the minister and the competences of the committee. So that one minister, one committee, of course then it doesn't happen because there are some committees like the Constitutional Affairs Committee that have four ministers that respond to them. But there is a kind, in order to make scrutiny more efficient, we try to make this correspondence. And there are, so how does it go? The Conference of Leaders settles a working group that decides how many committees there will be and what competences, so big shield, big umbrella competences they will have. And afterwards, there is a deliberation that is, and how many MPs the committees will have, and there is then a deliberation of the plenary, and we begin to work. Then the government has its organic law, and we look into this organic law, and then these finest competences. For example, we have the agriculture committee. But where do you have competence on forests, for example? Is it in agriculture? Is it in environment? So we try then to make, we draft a document that is then approved by the conference of chairpersons of the committees, where they settle these small details of competences so that my colleagues in the plenary division have the life easier when they suggest to the president that the bill should be referred to the committee A and not committee B, because sometimes it's not obvious. Most of the time it is. Of course, if you have a problem with a hospital, it is the health committee. That's easy. But then in other cases, it can be a little tricky. So we try to do this document that begins with a technical report and then is approved by the political power as complete as possible. And at the moment, we have 14 standing committees, which until 2019, we had settled between 12 and 13. From the 14th legislature until now, they have established in the 14 numbers. There is an exception, and it can be that now in June they have 11 or 16. It depends on the political will each legislature. With one exception, actually two, the Committee on Transparency and the Statute of Members of the Assembleia da República, which is a committee that deals with declaration obligations of members of parliament, or that makes issues an opinion in order to say that a member of parliament can be heard in court or not. Of course, this opinion is then approved by the plenary. But this committee is mandatory by law. So what I now know, I don't know how many committees I will have, but I know that this committee will be there. What we also have is our law monitoring the European affairs. It also says this refers to the European Affairs Committee. So MPs have been interpreting this law declaration as also the fact that the European Affairs Committee is a mandatory one, because sometimes it used to be a subcommittee of foreign affairs, but since 2007 it is also a committee that we always have. We also have foreign affairs always. Yes. I'm sorry, there is the first committee has disappeared, but it's a question of the constitutional affairs, rights, liberties.
Probably some committees are more desirable or more powerful than others.
Yes.
And how do you also balance that dynamics, particularly when it comes to...
Okay. In terms of course, in theory, it's a little like Animal Farm. All there are some committees, but we are all the committees are the same. But there are some that are quite of they have special powers. For example, constitutional affairs usually is my director used to be advisor of this committee. He has a strong power and is very respected. Also. Then the budget committee is mainly since we have been under the surveillance, budget surveillance of international IMF, and since we are also members of the European Union and we have to have our budget balanced, so the budget committee is also one that is very desirable, let's say. Economic affairs also lately, and then, I am the one who advises this working group of the Conference of Leaders, and when, for example, when they are choosing presidencies, Then I don't know in terms of parliamentary groups, how do they make the division of MPs for each committee. But regarding the presidency, the chairs of the committees, once the president said, okay, we do it as by an aunt method, so the first one to choose is the most voted, and then and so on. And the last ones that were chosen were agriculture, and even this transparency, territorial cohesion. But in theory, it also depends a little on what's on the table each time. But constitutional affairs and budget, I would say, so help me here. I think it's the ones that are always very desirable. And once upon a time, the first committee, the constitutional affairs, had always a chair from the majority, and the budget committee from the opposition. But it also depends on who you have in the parliamentary group that you want to put as a chair. So, for example, the Foreign Affairs had someone that, the Socialist Party had someone that always wanted to go to the Foreign Affairs Committee. So we always knew that when giving the cards, when distributing, they would always choose. But yeah, I think...
Sorry, just Christina explained everything very well, as she would. But just to tell you that there's a number of unwritten rules in the parliament. Mm-hmm. And so what Christina said, that the budgetary committee was usually chaired by someone by the largest majority opposition group, mm-hmm. was true up until... I don't know. I think we had 2015, probably. Yes, we had. But nowadays, the chair of the fifth committee, the budgetary committee, is again a member of the Socialist Party, who are in the opposition. So it's an yes, but it was also when he was in the majority. So we've had a small breach in this practice. But it's the unwritten rules in the parliament, and this is just what I was going to add, are as important as the written rules. Mm. We have rules of procedure, of course, but everything that sits between the rules of procedure, like interpretation by the conference of leaders, the conference of chairpersons, is as important as the rules of procedure, because the rules of procedure can be put aside by consensus. So, I mean, it varies. Yes, absolutely, yes.
Actually, it's the first thing you are told when you arrive here as an advisor is here are the rules of procedure. Usually, they only apply when they don't have consensus about what they want to do. So, if you come here as a lawyer and think everything is very regulated and so on, not every time, but. It's politics, yes, of course. So you can't arrive here and think that everything is going straight. So, no. So subcommittees, committees can also have subcommittees and working groups. And since 2000, since the revision of the rules of procedure in 2023, it can happen that an MP can be part of a working group or of a subcommittee. Of a committee and is not a member of the committee, so that they can put in each working group or in each subcommittee the people who they think are the best ones to fulfill a task. Working groups are subcommittees. We have two in the Constitutional Affairs Committee, and actually, in working groups, you have as many as the committees want, depending, they can be settled for hearings, for example, because one of the activities that committees do a lot is hearing people, hearing stakeholders, hearing petitioners, and some do it in the plenary sitting of the committee. Some others have settle a working group so that they can go on with the list of hearings that is usually a big one. Or you can have a working group for a law that is more complicated. And for example, when we were regulating the professional associations, there was a working group with MPs from the Constitutional Affairs Committee, from the working and from the labor, not working, what they call about the labor, social security and inclusion, and also from the health committee, because there were more than 20 associations that were being regulated, and everything was done in the working group and in discretionary voting, and then it was ratified by the committees and then by the plenary. The number of the compositions of the committees has to obey also has to have the same
proportion
as the plenary. So the deliberation that set up the committees for the current legislature said that there, in each committee there should be 7 members of the Socialist Party, 7 members of the Social Democrats, 4 members of the right wing, 2 of the Liberals, 1 of the Center Democratic, the Popular Party, then 1 of the Left Bloc, 1 of the Communists, 1 of the we have a unique representative for people and animals, and falta-me de Isabel, it's a kind of between, it's the left wing, but with European setup. Then we have the chair, the deputy, and 2 deputy chairs. The chair represents the committee, and the deputy chairs, of course, they settle when they step in when the chair doesn't have agenda and so on. In practice, the Liberals decided they would only put one MP in each committee. So I wrote there we have between 22 and 25 members, but in practice it's between 21 and 24, because the Liberals only put one. And why this difference? Because the smaller parties, they can only choose 3 to 4 committees to be part of, so they don't have MPs enough for every committee. And once again, who has everyone, or where every group wants to be? In the Constitutional Affairs Committee, in the Economic Committee, also in the Budget Committee. But they can change. It can be that, for example, the Livre, this European left party, in the middle of the session said, no, I want to leave one committee and go to the Budget Committee, so that he could participate in the budget debate in another. Of course, they can all participate everywhere, but not with the same powers. So, legislative procedure. So now I'm going to give the floor to Rafael.
But let me just add, sorry to go to your farm, this is actually
a committee room.
Yeah. A committee room, yes, yeah. The Foreign Affairs okay. Committee room. So the president would sit
the president,
on the top,
and then
right?
The advisor sits there, and then the right party is there, and the left one, yeah. The socialist and left. Yeah. Yeah.
So now we are going to talk to you about the legislative procedure. This is the railway of this procedure. It all starts with an email of the MPs or of the government with the bill. Then it's admitted. It obviously is considered by the committee and by the plenary meeting. They discussed it, they voted, and there's a final draft of the text, and then it goes to the other sovereign organs until become a law. But now we'll explain each one of these steps. So who can present a bill? Obviously the members of the parliament, no restrictions there. Our constitution, there was a revision to allow that also the citizens can present bills. They have to gather 20,000 signatures. Well, nowadays the law forgot about signatures and said the the registered electors have to indicate their name and other data, so that can be electronic. The data can be gathered electronically. So if 20,000 citizens agree, there can be a bill discussed here in the parliament. And we also have the government bill. And I don't know if you have heard of our autonomous regions of Portugal. We have two sets of islands, Madeira Island, where Cristiano Ronaldo comes from, and Açores. Well, my wife is also comes from Madeira, and she was born on the same year that Cristiano Ronaldo, so she should pick better than me, but she lost that opportunity. Why does the government present bills? As Cristina said, the legislative power is divided between the parliament and the government. Most of the issues both can legislate on, but there are some matters that our constitution says that only the parliament can legislate or can authorize the government to do it. That's why the government presents bills. Yes.
So I just wanted to know the balance between the executive branch and the legislative branch in terms of legislation to be presented. So would you say that the parliament would have more bills to draft and pass, or is it mainly the government that really provides those? Mm-hmm.
Regarding the numbers of approved bills, the government and the parties that support the government. In this year, we had a year of this legislature that is ending now. We have about 80 government bills and 800 MP bills, but most of them are from the opposition and they are rejected. Yeah. In terms,
they don't give up.
No.
They are rejected, but they don't give
quantity
up.
Quantity versus quality, I would say, in terms of what gets.
Yes.
Sorry. I would say maybe they don't agree with me, and they're absolutely free to say so. I would say it depends sometimes on whether or not you have an absolute majority or a relative majority. We've been having since 2022 relative majorities, and before that, and then the bills of members of parliament tend to grow. And maybe the number of laws approved by passed by Parliament are more. When you have absolute majority, I mean, the government does what it wants in terms of passing the laws, of course. I mean, they can, whether they can legislate on their own or can they put it to the Parliament and it will be approved for sure. In 2011 to 2015, I would say that the majority of laws passed was from the government, but we were, as Cristina said, under financial international help. So everything had to be passed. Some bills arrived in the morning and they were passed by the end of the day. Nowadays, not so much. I mean, Parliament regained in the past 10 years, Parliament regained a central position in the political system because of relative majorities and because of everything that's happening in the world. And Portugal is not, I would say...
Does it abide by a specific work program that the government, the legislations, for example, are they within a five-year duration, or is there a strategic approach in... Hmm.
Yeah.
Side of mm-hmm. passing some of the bills, but is there a more strategic... Yeah.
Like the European Union that has a legislative program. I mean, I believe it's Cristina or Rafael, through you. Yeah, but the government does not have a legislative... They have a program, a political program, and everything they will put forward will be... Everything, I won't say everything, but most of the bills that they put forward to the Parliament are under the scope of that... program that is discussed, debated, not approved in the beginning of the legislature. It's a common mistake that Portuguese people do. They say that we debate the government program and then they approve it. They don't approve it. They can vote on it, but they can reject it, but they cannot approve it. I mean, they debate it for 2 days and that's that. If it's not rejected, we're good to go. I would say that everything that the government puts forward is under the scope of that program, political program, but... Every it's every day is more usual that you have some problem that rises. It's a social problem, and then you regulate it with a new legislation. Whether it comes from the government or from the MPs, you tend to see it. It's a social emergency response, if you like, which is not good legislation. But
and with negative majorities that we are having more and more, it often happens that we have these negative coalitions, so that the government presents a bill, and then that opposition together passes either another bill or presents amendments that completely, make a different bill, a different law out of the bill that the government wanted to. So it's quite, I think, it's interesting in terms for people who like politics and see how this whole dynamic goes. But Parliament still has, when absolute majority, it's easier for us, not so interesting, but easier to work because we know immediately what's going to happen. Relative majority has this wonderful thing that you never know in the morning what's going to happen in the evening. So even with budgets that have been, for the first time in 50 years, the budget for 2022-23 was rejected, which was something very strange that never happened before. And these negative coalitions happen also even more. And there's another thing that we are prepared, even our rules of procedure are prepared for two main parties and then the others. And now we have a third party with 50 MPs. And in terms of organizing, for example, the chairs of the committees, the places in plenary, all that, it was quite a challenge even for us officials because we had to relearn or reset our thinkings in another way, different from what we, for us, was obvious, socialist, social democrats, and then the others. And now it's socialist, social democrats, and then, if I say, then the other 50, which is kind of, I know it's not a big group, but it's quite, it makes a shift that is also, I'd say a challenge, sorry.
I would just add that since Portugal is a part of European Union, the bills that the government presents that I don't know how to say transpose the European Union directives, those are unanimous. It's rare a bill of government that transpose something from European Union that is changed in the Parliament or not approved. So that would be the area that they have more continuity. The other days they saw the news and they think in the new law or a new bill. The law teachers in the universities are always criticizing this fever to legislate. I don't know if you have any other question regarding to this. So after the bill is presented, the division where I work, they provide a small paper to the president. So the president, or better, the advisors of the president can analyze. So he can admit the bill. He set the competent committee, and there are also other information, like if it's already scheduled to a plenary meeting. We also check if there's a gender form, a gender evaluation form that is or not presented with the bill, that is mandatory, as we'll say after. After this staff note, the president admits the bill. As I told you before, most of them are admitted. The only cases that there's not admission is on grounds of manifest and unconstitutionality.
And here we go again. So the bill admittability is referred to one of our committees for the voting on the general principles. So the referral is announced in the committee. One member is appointed to drawing up the opinion of the committee, which is now, well, sometimes it's called report. Now it's called report again, but it ends with an opinion. And how do we appoint the members? Also, we use the ONT method, proportional method. So we do it for 25 or 24 members in each committee, so that, of course, the major parties have more reports to draw than the other ones. With some exceptions, usually most committees try that the bill is not reported or the opinion is not drafted by, if it is a bill from the government, they try that it is not the major party to draw the report. Or if I present an initiative, so that it's not also, they try to appoint another rapporteur from another parliamentary group, so that you have another inside view of the initiative and not of the party that has presented it. This report is supported by a technical note that we have to draw within 15 days. And actually, this technical note that exists since the review, since 2007, has been gaining more and more impact here. And finally, in the 2023 revision of the rules of procedure, there is a rule saying that if you don't have to make another juridical analysis, or if you don't have to analyze the inputs received by the public discussion, that you have to open to every bill. So the MP can say, okay, I accept what is in the technical note. So now the reports can have 1.5 pages with the signature of the rapporteur and of the president of the committee, the chair of the committee, but where the content is mainly a technical one. What we have in this technical note that is drafted in by four services, it's when we receive the bill, my colleagues from the committee make an email to Rafael, to the colleague from the Division of Information and Legislative Information legislative, parliamentary legislative information, and to the library, and also for the colleagues from the European Affairs Committee, and ask for inputs for this technical note. And in 10 days, Rafael assigns someone to do an analysis of the, which is a development of this admission note, and also sees into the main logistic questions and so on. We draw apart from the context and also the European affairs part, if there is some European matter that also regulates the matter that is being regulated in this bill. And our colleagues from the library tell us if there are some books or some sites that are important in order for you to look into it, in order to make a better analysis. And the information to the Parliamentary Information and Legislative Department, they make a story of the how this matter has been regulated here in Portugal since some time, and also a comparative study with other countries. And these other countries, it depends sometimes. It depends on the languages that the colleagues speak, and so they go to France or England, so on. Or it can be that the rapporteur asks, well, I would like to see how this is regulated in a specific country. And so they try and go to see how it is in this country, and also from international organizations. So they do this part. My colleagues from the committee division do the context, write the context of the bill. And they make a comparative chart if the bill is making alterations of a bill that already exists. And they write, and they put all the inputs together after these 10 days. And finally they send a technical note to my director and to me for a last reading. So, well, I read the last year 400 and something, and so he read the other 400 and something. It's kind of, and each technical note can have, well, 15 to 30 pages, depending on the case. But we are very proud that MPs take it as a document that they think it's good enough to be the not only the annex of the report, but the content of part of the report, the content that is not political, and they only add the political opinion. Sorry. It is now the bill is drafted and presented, and it is already in the committee. It was admitted by the president, announced in the plenary, and it was referred to the committee. So it's not a drafting of the. It's only an analyze. We analyze the text in terms of logistics, in terms of formal issues, and sometimes they say, well, maybe the title should be a little more specific, or this bill, because we have something that we call the break bill, the break law, which is that political groups can present a bill that makes more expenses during the budgetary year. And so they looked into it and say, well, it can be that if approved, this bill will make that there will be more expenses or less income of the state. And so, but it can be amended, and they can say that it enters into force in the with the next budget bill, which is sometimes, usually it's what the parliamentary groups do. So it's kind of a technical analysis and international context, a national context, and what is the state of the art, let's say, about this matter. Oh, of course. We can, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We actually, we published them on the website.
Yes.
We'll give them to you. I mean, yeah. Our website is quite complicated, so we'll give them to you, no problem at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In theory, yes, there is a point called impact evaluation. We'll be there. We'll talk about it at the end of the presentation. Because the point is there, and we should look into it, if we had the tools to do it. But we'll be
yes, we'll talk about that later.
Talk about
when
that,
I talk to you about the things that we still do not accomplish fully.
Yeah, that's one of them.
We are mandated to do so, but we don't have the tools or the possibility. I mean, when we have something like Christina said, like 800 bills, or Rafael said. You cannot do impact assessment on eight.
No.
Yeah,
and
we should do a randomized selection.
We would if we had the tools. I mean,
yes.
We don't have the stuff with the economical. If you want to do, I'm getting
even,
into their
no,
terms,
no,
but
it's,
I mean, if you want to do proper impact assessment, you have to have
a
multidisciplinary crew that we don't have. Two or three economical advisors, and that's that. I mean,
we have the budget unit.
Yes, the PBO that I talked to you about, they do impact assessment on the budget.
They should do.
And they, I mean, they've done it in one or two bills outside the budget in this past. They've been created in 2006, so it's not. But they're very short staffed. I mean, they're four people, so it's not like they can do what we were supposed to be doing.
Legal drafting, let me just say that the parliamentary groups, they do the drafting, they present the bills, but obviously sometimes there are mistakes, and we notice about the formal mistakes. Sometimes they want to amend a law that is no longer in force, for example. So what...
Yes.
If if it contradicts, you have to see if it is politics or not. If it's only a technical issue, what do? We contact the parliamentary groups in the phase of the admission, or the our advisors, for example, of the committees in this phase, and we say, oh, there's a mistake here. Do you want to change the text? And they often, when this is a formal thing, they obviously they change it.
What we also do in this phase is we looked into the bill and see if there are some mandatory consultations that we have to do. For example, local authority, because the ones from the regions of Açores and Madeira, they are done by the speaker. But then in the committee, we have the local authorities sometimes that we have to consult, or if it's something that regards a bill that is about working matters, we have also to make a public consultation to the trade unions, or if something about disabled people, we have also to consult the disabled people's associations. There is a list of consultations that we also have. We have a manual online that is now being reviewed, and because each time we stop the legislature, we profit to look into all the procedures that need to be updated, because of course it is impossible to do so if you have the normal regular meetings and so on. And since 2023, it is mandatory to put every bill in public consultation, which means that we have to open in the internet a page saying it's on public consultation. It doesn't substitute the other consultations that we have to do, but it is now mandatory for everything, and it stays open, this consultation, until you begin, either until the bill is rejected, which happens quite frequently, or before you begin the voting on the details in committee. In practice, it was launched because, of course, our colleagues from the IT had to develop it, the tool to do this consultation, and it was launched exactly in the week where the legislature was, where the government, when we were dissolved. So I can't say what will be the impact of this public consultation. What I know is from the petitions that are also public that we gather very valid contributions, and then some contributions that we have to be careful before letting them go public. So our advisors will have to look into the contributions and see, can I publish it or not? Because not everyone loves us, so they profit. These consultations, this public consultation, there is on the internet. You open the consultation in the and say, you say in the front page, the bill number 123 is under public consultation, and you can there is a chart where you can put your input and write yes, every citizen, everywhere, either is if it is a valid one or not. I didn't hear, I'm sorry.
Is there an agenda for people to know that that month will be a voting on this act?
If it begins.
But it depends. We have actually, as Christina said, we had this method of consultation. It's very recent, this opening to every bill.
Everyone for every
but
bill.
We still have some formal procedures that can be adopted by a committee to have a public hearing with the publication of two newspapers, two national newspapers have to advertise. We pay for that, saying that we are holding a public consultation on this or that bill, mostly regarding labor law or. Sometimes, environmental, it's not mandatory. In some cases it is, in others it's not. But labor law, it's a classic example where we are mandated to publish those advertisements in the newspaper, so people will know.
in labor law, mostly the contribution it's that we receive from the unions, of course, because they have been advised, they are with their eyes very, very close to us. Regarding your question, whether or not we announced previously that we'll have a vote, I mean, Rafael will talk about it, but we only know what we will vote by Wednesday to Friday, if you like. So we can have, but we get that question a lot, and committees get that question a lot, so we do some quick math and say, well, in this stage, it probably won't be voted before something, because we're in this stage of the procedure. So it's not possible to know exactly the day where we voted. Yes. And actually, I mean, I told you the website is very complicated, but one thing that I have to say is that our legislative procedures are absolutely transparent. Every piece of document that we provide, or the MPs provide, is on the website. So everybody can, it's complicated, but it's there. So the government, not so much, because it's by its own nature, it's confidential, it's reserved, but ours is completely open. So people who are focus groups, people who are unions, people who are interested and invested in some subject, and some subjects more than others, of course, they are able to accompany it and to know when or whether or not it will be voted.
Yeah. We receive very spontaneous contributions also in the email of the committees. This new public mandatory public consultation is an extra tool for participating. Let's see how it's going to work in practice. Because, as I told, we opened it and, well, and no more bills could be presented. Actually, they are still open because, in theory, the legislature ends only on the day before the new one begins. So we couldn't close them, these consultations, but in practice, they are there. It's no. At the moment, you have to do public consultation mandatory for every bill, one, in the website linked to the initiative and for the whole world. That's one. And then there are other mandatory consultations depending on the matter. For example, if you are regulating something that will impact on the municipalities, you have to hear the association of the municipalities. Or if it is impacting disabled people, you have to hear the associations of the disabled people. Or the labor matters, it's also mandatory. And there you have to do, as my director said, you have to put into the newspaper that this consultation is open. So you can participate in the legislative procedure in many manners. You can also write to the chair of the committee saying, well, I have something to say about it, and you will be received. If you write a letter with a technical opinion and so on, it will also be published. So we hear everyone, or almost everyone, as much as it is, when possible, and everything is put on the website in the initiative's workflow. So you can know what inputs you had, if the inputs were taken into account or not. And I think this will be the biggest challenge, is that people are participating and then they don't see the article that they wanted to see in the law, but it's life, I would say. And so we have various forms of participation. As I told, we have this guide, only in Portuguese, but we can provide it, and then if it's useful, and it's being updated with this new public consultation. Two colleagues of mine are working on it, but then maybe we can give it an answer.
Just like to add, Christina said everything, but what this new rule is in the rules of procedure. We have also a law mandating the form, if you like, the way, the cosmetics of public consultation. So what changes is the way in which we consult people. This new rule opens to everybody. Every citizen can contribute.
And
to every bill. In other cases, it's a case of the law mandating. I mean, if we're regulating judiciary issues, of course, we have to hear the superior councils and the board and the lawyers association. And I would say that in the first committee, the constitutional affairs, 99% of every bills have to be consulted.
Yes.
The committee will send a letter asking for an opinion. Then we receive the opinion. members of the parliament have it in consideration or not. No cases in legal affairs, I would say that, yeah, they take into consideration, and then we publish it on the website.
For example, budget, we have to hear the Court of Audit, we have to hear the Economic and Social Council. So it really depends on what you are regulating or what you are legislating. So the committee decides what entities shall be consulted, or in case it's mandatory, we do it ourselves in terms of opening the site for public consultation, or we give the chair a letter for him to sign to ask for the opinions that are mandatory and then don't need a deliberation from the committee. So then within 30 days, the report of the committee is presented and discussed. And usually the conclusion is that the bill fulfills the constitutional requirement and those provided for in these rules of procedure to be scheduled, to be put to the vote at plenary, and the parliamentary groups reserve their opinion for the debate on the general principles in plenary. It is very rare that the plenary group or that the rapporteur gives the opinion about the bill during the committee discussion, because they like to do it in a bigger stage like the plenary. So this first report is more important in terms of a first analysis than really, as you can't see a political opinion. It sometimes happens, but it's very rare. So we refer it again to the plenary, and I'll give the floor back to Rafael.
As I told you before, the Conference of Leaders schedules the bills. So when the parliamentary groups went, or the government went to see a bill discussed, they are scheduled in that organ, and then they can be debated on plenary. As I also told you, and to be a little bit more specific, since it's scheduled, for instance, if you were working regularly and this week, we would be scheduling things for about a month, the next month. So the citizens could know that the bill 500 about our health service will be discussed in the Wednesday of June. So if it's discussed in the Wednesday, probably the most probable scenario is to be voted on the next Friday.
Or not.
because sometimes they delay the vote and go back to the committee to gather a political consensus about it. But so this general principles discussion is made in plenary meetings. When a bill is scheduled, for instance, about health. So the other parties can also present bills about that issue, so it can be discussed in the same point of the agenda. So that's why we have hundreds of bills, because if the parliamentary groups do it, they have one minute added to the time to speak. So everyone wants, especially the opposition, the smaller parties, want that extra minute. So sometimes they even copy bills from each other just to have a bill on that point of the agenda. If it's approved, the general principles are approved, then it go back to the committee for the voting on details.
So the discussion and voting on details takes place, as I told you before, in the committee or subcommittee, or sometimes a working group is settled if there is a more complicated process. And various things can happen. If it is a very simple process, they schedule the bill and say to the parliamentary groups, you can present amendments until Friday, for example, for the for a scheduled bill on the Tuesday or Wednesday, because usually our meetings are on Tuesday's afternoon or on Wednesday mornings, ordinarily. Or if it is something more complicated, it is scheduled and they debate how do we want to look into it. If it's something like euthanasia or these social or these professional associations or something that is going really to impact the society. So usually they set up a working group and they hear all the stakeholders or they ask for written contributes. Or sometimes they also organize a kind of conference where they say to professors and university professors, come here and talk to us about this. So you can have as many forms of debating of in details as the kind of bill you are looking into. Then the voting. These draft amendments shall be presented. They are usually it is an organized process so that we can organize for the meeting either the comparative charts and the voting guides. Sometimes there are voting guides with 300, 400 pages. Of course, the budget is another part that it's more, much more than this. But even for the other bills, it can happen if you have a bill with 200 articles and then from the government, for example, and then another party had also another bill, the bill about the same matter, and then everyone has 30 amendments to present. So we need time to organize it in order to make everything more transparent. Of course, you can do it with paper, but it's not a clean job. And the advantage of doing this pre-work is then you have to draw the voting reports so that Rafael knows at the end of the day what has been approved or not when he's then drafting the final text. We do the final text, but they do the last check. And so this pre-work is important for the report and also for the citizen to go to the site and see, well, who voted in favor, who voted against, what happened in this during this meeting. Everything is registered. Usually these meetings are not on video because they can be rather, I would say, not boring, but because only the people who have the papers and have the information know what is number 5 from Article 7 and so on. But everyone, the hearing registers are also available as well as the reports we draft with the results of the voting. And information, when we end our work, we tell Rafael, okay, it's done, it's approved, so he knows until Wednesday that he can put it on his voting guide for Friday, so for the final voting. And we refer it back to the plenary, where it is handled by Rafael and his staff. Yes, yes.
Absolutely. I mean, we can, yes, as I told you in the beginning, we can shortcut it. I mean, they're giving a very thorough explanation on legislative procedure. I asked them to, but I mean, we can shortcut it and we'll have the lunch to exchange our opinion. So,
yes,
please.
From the beginning until the end, or it depends completely on. Usually, the government bills are faster.
Yeah.
So I would say
we don't
30. You can say because you have 30 days for the committee, for example. But if the conference of leaders schedules the bills, we do the reports prior to the 30 days. Mm. Or it can also happen that you don't follow this process because it is very urgent, like during COVID, for example. Yeah. There were some laws that entered in the morning and went back. But I would say 3 months,
yeah,
for the or Some others never see the light of the
planning.
It
depends on the legislature, on the subject, as Christina said. We don't have the statistics for this legislature. We will have them when we do the final report on the work we've done this past year. It depends. It can be, I would say, on average. Actually, in our database, we can calculate the average for initiatives, but not for all, for each one of them. I would say yes. Between 3 months, it's the normal time, 90 days, if you like. Some of them take years to see the light of day. Some of them don't.
Never see the
and lights. Some, as Christina said, come in the morning and are expedited by the end of the day.
And the budget, 50 days, right?
The budget, 50, yeah. That one is, yes,
but
that's
the budget.
Yeah, it has a day to be presented and a day to be approved,
to go out,
and that's it. It would depend whether or not it's presented by the government. It tends to be more expedite in that way, or whether or not there's consensus. I mean, if everybody agrees, I mean, the law is made. You can bypass all these steps that they've been describing, and it can be presented in the morning, and it's a decree. It's not actually called a law when it gets out of the parliament. It's called a decree because it has to be submitted to the President of the Republic for promulgation. Yeah, sorry. Or veto, and then it becomes a law. But we don't have a fixed day. I would say 3 months is the usual. Yeah, sorry.
Sorry about that. So what actually brought us here today, and from what you have shared with us, is we know that Portugal have come a long way in judicial reforms, and we're very interested in the legislative industry and the process you go through to prepare legislations. And as you mentioned, there are like certain protocols or mandates. And at the moment, we're currently working on developing these, whether it was on the tools we have, like the regulatory tools. So we have our own interior regulations when it comes to the Ministry of Justice, and then we have like the umbrella regulations from the Council of Ministers. So we abide by these regulatory tools, which we are currently trying to develop further, whether it was on the document itself or the official documents or in practice. So this is where most of my questions came in, like, do you do this out of practice, or is it like mandated by law? Do you have like some kind of structure, organization, whether it was like internally or with other entities you collaborate with? So if you could help us on that front and share the knowledge and expertise you have. You've already shared so much, so thank you so much. And it's very inspiring and impressive work that you are doing, so thank you so much for that.
Maybe the team can introduce themselves as well, Noura?
Yeah, open the mic. Oh, I have to turn off mine.
Okay, thank you. Thank you again for having us. My name is Noura. I'm also a legal specialist at the Legislations Office at the Ministry of Justice.
Hi, good morning. My name is Shahid. I'm a legal researcher at the Legislation Office. And thank you all for the information that you provide. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Hanof Sulami. I am also on the Legislative Office and the Ministry of Justice.
Hello, I'm Sarah Shamri. I'm a social specialist. Thank you.
First of all, I would like to thank you for the kind welcome and for the informative presentation that you provide and providing us. Thank you.
Maria Carolina, I'm currently a trainee lawyer, and I was appointed to assist Mr. Walid in organizing these visits.
Well, for the sake of understanding, we should speak in English. So my name is Felipe Marques. I'm a judge in Portugal. I've been a judge for 20-something years. I'm currently at the Court of Auditors here in Lisbon. And I'm just assisting, I've been assisting the World Bank and Walid Malik for some time in some justice sector projects. And well, he asked me to assist him in the organization of this visit of the Saudi Arabia delegation. So that's in that capacity I'm here. Thank you for having us.
Hello, my name is Fatma Ali Ibrahim. I'm a governance specialist with the World Bank. I work with the governance global practice in the MENA region. A lot of the work I personally have been doing is on civil service reform, anti-corruption reform, and also I've worked on a parliament support engagement, particularly in the GCC, on enhancing the capacity of MPs in economic policy. So this is something that is very close to heart, and I've worked with a lot of colleagues, and working with parliamentarians is a very interesting activity to conduct. So very different to government, which is a very exciting, and Vision 2030, and the kingdom has been going through a major transformation in their development agenda, as you've heard, even recently in the news, and Saudi has been going through that transition, and a lot of regulations and legislative and judicial reforms are required to really balance that economic transformation and reform. So it's a pleasure, it's a privilege to hear from you, and for us to be in such a historical, such a beautiful building. I'm looking forward particularly to the tour, but I also would like to open it up to my colleague Walid, who is also supporting this engagement. Over to you, Walid.
Thank you so much. Do you hear me?
Yes, we do. Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for... first of all, thank you so much for arranging this very historic visit of the Saudi delegation to the Parliament of Portugal. This is a very important initiative, as my colleague Fatma said, that the Vision 2030 of the Kingdom, the initiative is being carried out by the Ministry of Justice and the other authorities in improving economic progress and prosperity in the country of Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, is supported by the World Bank, and we are very honored from the bank side. As said, my name is Walid Malik. I'm senior public sector expert with the governance team supporting the project. I would like to share two things. First, I think the technical exchange clearly identifies some sort of a next continuation of dialogue and engagement, so that the conversations today can lead to an expanded exchange at the technical level on the legislative drafting side, so that these experiences can be shared. And of course, it is a decision of the authorities in the kingdom, but from a technical point of view, I think the need and the demand and the synergies are very clear, which need to be expanded. And the second point, which is also very clear from the conversation today, is that new reforms are also being undertaken in Portugal, as the public consultation process, which is a key element of any high-quality regulatory reforms. So it would be very important for the authorities and for us to learn from it and see how that process continues and how that process will be expanded. So with that, deep appreciation to the Parliament Joao for taking the special interest and helping us set up this agenda. And we look forward to the conversation. And finally, my apologies that I'm not physically present there and for your kind arrangement to connect me virtually. At last minute, I could not travel. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Walid. Thank you all. I feel the need to apologize because, as you said, we should have started by this, but we wanted to get straight to business, not to preclude this part, but to give you all the information we can. We're happy to share, as you can see. I asked both Rafael and Cristina to talk a little bit. They won't do it now. We'll talk about it at lunch, about impact assessment. As you know, I mean, as I've told you, it's something that we're mandated to do, but I wouldn't say it's a case of success because, I mean, it's the effectiveness of the rule is not, I would say, it's on the very low end of the scale. It's very good for you to tell us what is the main purpose of the main point of interest of this conversation. We're happy to share. We'll exchange contacts. We'll give you all the information that you need. And this is the beginning of our relationship, not the end. So the information will flow for you. And when we need some information, we'll ask as well. We didn't want to take too much of your time, but we have a very complicated legislative procedure. So sometimes it's a miracle that laws do get out of Parliament. Sometimes it's a miracle that anyone understands that. And I won't ask the Honourable Judge to comment on that. But I mean, sometimes it gets they get out and they are very well done, and we're proud of that. We work every day, as you can see. I would say that the staff, and on a more personal note, are always very engaged in providing the Parliament with the best technical advisory, and they're very proud when the work is well done. Although it's not our work, it's a political work, of course, but we feel part of it. So, I mean, any information that you need, you'll have the guided tour, which will be, I'm sure, excellent. Our colleague Edith will follow you through this palace, which began by being a convent, a monastery, something like 500 and something years ago, and she will talk to you all about it. Sometimes we forget we work in a palace because we've been coming here every day for the best part of 30 years. So, at lunchtime, we'll be more than happy to exchange our opinions and to continue our frank exchange and conversations. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Muito obrigado.